What up, Lakers? What up, Dragons? What up, Danzig Era Misfits? This is some bonus content. So I did a podcast earlier tonight when I'm recording this with a gentleman that goes by Ben the Emo ANCAP. It was a really good interview. We did talk a little bit of politics here and there, but we mainly stuck to music. So it was originally for No More Heroes, so that's why there's like some politics and stuff like that, but I didn't realize Ben was like so deep into the music industry and bands and stuff like that. So I ended up like getting to pick his brain about how bands can make money on tour. You know, he was talking about Blink-182's Rider. It was a very fun podcast. I thought it went really well. And yeah, just because it went so music heavy, I thought you guys would really enjoy it. So I'm uploading it here. Enjoy the bonus content. This is Ben, the Emo ANCAP. I think you'll really enjoy it. Have fun. All right. Have a good one. Bye-bye. What is good? What is good? Welcome to a brand new episode of No More Heroes. I'm your host, Andy Malafrina, and we have a special guest, probably the first guest. You're the first guest of the new era. I've had Robbie Fire, Jose Galison, Clint Russell, which you had Clint on your pod, right?
Did, yep. I had him on a couple weeks ago, yeah.
Hell yeah, awesome, but dude. Hell yeah, yeah. No, Clint's the fucking man. But yeah, so I did sort of a factory reset, a grand reopening, and I just realized you're the first fucking guest of this. So
okay,
welcome to the pod, Ben the Emo ANCAP. How you doing, bro?
Good, dude. I am. I'm just chilling. I just finished kind of putting a bunch of my music stuff away, getting into the mood to start recording again and stuff, and. Yeah, I'm here. I'm excited. I'm alive and trying to kick it. You know what I mean?
I feel you. What instrument do you play?
I actually can play a little bit of everything. I've like played bass pretty much my entire life, but then I moved into guitar in my teens. And then the best instrument you can know how to play as a musician is a computer. So, you know, pretty much. You know, late teens into adulthood, I kind of got into like, you know, a lot into songwriting and, you know, producing type stuff. I sang in a couple bands. Yeah, I mean, I kind of am all over the place. I've done a little bit of DJing. Like, the only thing I'm not like fluent in is drums, but I can hold a beat for sure. So
I feel you. I was just talking to someone too. Well, so wait, are you proficient in the actual music production and stuff?
Yeah, I've been producing music for a long time. Actually, more recently, like I've put out a couple songs, like just solo. Like I haven't even shared them with anybody. Just during like COVID, I was living out in California and I had way too much time on my hands because I couldn't play shows. I couldn't do anything. So, you know, pretty much all the fun concerts were done. You know, I couldn't do any of that stuff. So I basically just started writing and recording in my apartment out there. And then now I'm, you know, I don't know, put together a couple pretty good produced songs by myself. But, you know, I've also helped other people produce songs as well. So, you know.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I was just thinking with like, now I have this in my head because we were talking of, I forget what the fucking band's name was, but on my other pod, Drag the Lake, we were just talking about like AI music and stuff like that, and how I forget what the name of it was, but the whole band looked like characters you'd find in World of Warcraft, and apparently like,
is it Gwar?
No, it's Gwar's like more of, this was like orcs and Vikings and stuff like that. Not like, not so much like interplanetary.
Necrobin? I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah.
It might be that similar vibe, but no, they're showing now like with AI, they basically, now they nudge AI in the direction a little bit, but they can basically make their own band with it.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, like what's your perspective on that? Like coming from a place of music production and stuff. Cause I don't know. I see a lot of mixed feelings about AI. People are afraid of it. People are hyped about it. Where are you sitting on that in the context of music?
I mean, I know people very well that like use AI as like a regular function of their job, which is wild because, you know, like AI can't replace human and like every all the way, you know, it can definitely help you out. You know, I've seen people like writing articles and like entire, like newspaper articles or whatever off of like ChatGPT or whatever. But like when it comes to music, I think that there's like a soul in the music that you just can't fake.
Bro,
like,
I literally said this. I said the same shit. Sorry to cut you off. I apologize. Good. I felt the same fucking way.
Yeah, I honestly don't think that it's possible to I definitely think there's going to be a lot of AI music in the future. There's going to be possibly times that you can't tell if the song you're listening to is AI or real. I think that's going to happen. But I think that's probably more in the mainstream poppy genre, because there's definitely more of a science behind that. Like they have a formula, they stick with it. And that's why every song on the Billboard charts is basically a 4-chord song. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think that there's a like something there, but I don't think like in rock and roll and in punk rock, like you can't fake the attitude. You can't fake, you know, the actual punk mindset. Like ChatGPT doesn't understand that. They could never wrap their head around that. They can watch, they can study, and it can know everything about punk rock, and there's no way it's gonna have any idea how I feel here. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I was so happy you said soul specifically, because that's what we were talking about. Like I was listening to the band once again, whatever the fuck the World of Warcraft band was called, I was listening to them, and it was like fine. I'm not really into that style of metal, but it was fine, and it was good music. It was well written and whatever, but just knowing it was a computer and like not an actual person, you're like, yes, there's no soul to it. I don't care what's happening one iota. And I gotta be honest, I have been a little like catastrophic or dystopian on the AI stuff, and seeing that, I'm just like, oh, okay, it might not be as bad as I thought. Like, it's not gonna completely.
Yeah, I mean, you can already see what it's doing with art. I mean, it can't even get art right yet because it's giving everybody 6 and 7 fingers if it's doing a person. But you know, like it, like I don't know. I think that like visually, there's gonna be, you know, an area where AI might be able to dominate. I still think that like people who paint and do graphic design work are gonna be very much so necessary, because while AI can get you off on the right foot, there's also like, even with just regular graphic design work, you have like personal ideas that it's not going to be able to replicate, and you're going to need to maybe touch up whatever design AI created or started for you. And once again, like, I'm not even like really necessarily recommending artists to go that route ever. But, I can see definitely a lot of people using it as like a crutch. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing, like they'll probably use it more as a crutch, because to carry their less than talented selves. We're going to see a lot of people who have literally no talent, you know, becoming successful artists, just like we see tons of influencers on YouTube with no real life talent just becoming insanely popular because they know how to sit in front of a microphone. You know,
yeah.
I mean? So
yeah. No, I hear you. And it all, well, oh, dude, I got scared. So I do stand-up comedy, and
oh, cool.
I found a thing today where a dude made a AI George Carlin special.
Oh my God.
Yeah, dude. He took all of George Carlin's books and his stand-up specials, pumped them in, and just it pumped out a special. And it was like, I wasn't worried until I started laughing at it.
Was it able to replicate his like dirty humor?
Dude, it was like, so it sounded like Carlin. It sounded like 80% Carlin, like in his voice. It had his cadence, and okay. it did replicate his style, but it was just like an okay Carlin special. You know what I mean?
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was nuts. And dude, there's a whole YouTube channel that's just an AI Joe Rogan experience. Like, but I do think back to the music and back to the art, like a painting or something. It's when, for me at least, once you find out that a real person didn't do it,
yeah,
it takes the value away. And I think that might be sort of the pivot people should do, where it's realize like, you know, you being a human, there's more value in it because of the meaning that it provides.
Oh, for sure. I agree completely. Yeah. I think that like, you know, and I actually, I follow some of those like on YouTube, some of those AI channels too. I think they're hilarious and they're creative. Like they'll turn like, I don't know, any song you could think. Like I saw like an AI Linkin Park singing Somebody You Used to Know by Gyote or whoever the hell they
however
are.
However you say that, yeah.
Yeah. That's but, nuts. You know, it's wild. It is wild. But I ultimately, like, there is no like replacement for artists. It's I think the people who have more of a threat are the people who like work in an office and do like business, and they have to like do things like write articles and all that stuff, because it like takes a lot of the thinking out of it. And you know, hopefully, you know, there's, like I said, they're going to still have to edit things. There's still going to be someone there that has to like manage all of that stuff. But like, we're talking like probably two or three people's jobs being taken down to just one, you know what I mean? That's kind of what I was more getting at.
Yeah, no, I hear where you're coming from. Cause yeah, from the more, yeah, if it's just like, hey, I need a fucking picture like this, or yeah, like you were saying with the article stuff, I remember that was the first instinct I had. Cause I'm at my core a dude trying to find a get rich quick scheme, and I constantly fight to like go away from that. But that was like the first thing I thought of when I saw ChatGPT. I was like, oh, you could just do a whole music website. Like just type in, give me a top 10 list of the 10 best metal albums.
If you know how to prompt ChatGPT, man, you can like actually have it start off some songs for you. You know what I mean? But it's not going to like imitate your style. Yeah. But like, you know, like that's another thing, is like every artist has its own style. ChatGPT, you wouldn't be able to copy that. Like I know that some of my favorite artists and singers and people who are like very poetic in how they, and you're going to get some poems out of ChatGPT. Like I have no doubt about it, but like, you know, there's going to be a void there. Like for sure. You're still going to have to do work if that's the route you want to go. And I hope it doesn't get too much crazier, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. You were saying something earlier about like, yeah, when you're saying like, it doesn't have the soul and it can't like do the punk rock spirit. I think that, I know for me, I don't know about you, but like for me, I was sort of in college, I was your stereotypical college liberal. Now I'm like more or less an ANCAP and shit. And my perception of punk rock has sort of shifted, and like, what is punk rock and stuff? Cause
yeah,
like I'm in my 30s and it's like, I'm not trying to sit here and be like, I'm still fucking punk rock, but I still love it because of the punk rock ethos and shit.
To be honest with you, like, I think like anarcho-capitalism is very punk rock, because punk rock is just countercultural, and there's nothing, you know, that's more countercultural at the moment than anarcho-capitalism. And I say that because we don't have free markets, you know, we don't have free speech, we don't have freedom to do what we want. And I'm an anarchist, you know, I definitely would say like, if there's a version of anarchism that I align with, it's definitely anarcho-capitalism. But even that, we don't have all the answers there necessarily. So, you know, that's why I primarily identify myself as an anarchist to people. But, you know, even though my handle's the emo ANCAP, like I said, I love capitalism. I love laissez-faire. This is the only way that you can have anarchy work is with laissez-faire capitalism. So, and you know, like I said, in our market today, they might say we have like free market capitalism, and it's so ridiculously oversaturated with, you know, cronies and all this stuff that like, there's nothing even that resembles free market capitalism at this point.
Dude, isn't that the most irritating thing too? Like, it reminds me of, I watched that one Enron documentary, and they were, I think it was like Smartest Guys, whatever it was called. And, but they like, you just reminded me how they always throw out like our terms, and then they like get them completely wrong, but then also figure out a way to get people to be like, yeah, that stuff does suck. Cause like in the Enron documentary, they have a part where, like, they're literally talking about giving Enron full control of doing their thing in California. And then they somehow get to the idea. They're like, and that's why deregulation's bad. And you're like, yo, how did you do that?
Yeah. How did you get to this point? Yeah. Like, I don't get it, man. It's wild. But, you know, going like, you know, talking about like punk rock, like, you know, I've been, you know, this is how I formed a lot of my initial political opinions, was through the music I listened to as an early teenager. You know, and like I listen to a lot of like old punk, you know, like, you know, even like started with kind of more I guess poppier punk, like NoFX, MXPX was my favorite band, it still is. You know, Sum 41. But I also like loved like Minor Threat, Fugazi, stuff like that. And you know, a lot of like my opinions, like even Anti-Flag, Rise Against, there's a lot of punk rock attitude and grit that was saturating the scene in several different genres too. But like that is like, I've been nothing but disappointed growing up and becoming a teenager into being an adult, seeing all these people who like I used to love and I used to think hated the government just as much as me. And I grow up and I'm like, you guys just played the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah.
What the hell happened? You know what I mean? So like, it's really sad to see that a lot of the people I thought were anarchist punk rock, you know, musicians ended up just being a different flavor of statist than the one, you know what I mean? Like the problem is that, you know, they want, you know, to enact all of their beliefs through authoritarian means. And it just is, the opposite of the mainstream authoritarianism. That's what it is. So like, it's just a different flavor of authoritarianism at the end of the day. And it's all the same.
Yeah. What do you think? Cause that's the thing I've been trying to figure out, because I grew up listening to a shit ton of punk and pop punk music. And I loved listening to the punk. Like you were throwing out bands like NoFX, Anti-Flag. Mm-hmm. I love listening to dudes like that. Cause the vibe was, I was always down for a good fuck you. And yeah. the vibe was always fuck you.
It's
and
not there then, anymore though. But if you go to a hardcore show,
that's what I was going to say. That's why yeah. I fucking got the Kubicon shirt on. Yeah. That's why I'm so much
more. I just
saw more...
Jesus Peace a few months ago. Like,
yo, how good was that?
That was like one of the best live shows I've been to in a long time. They're so good.
Dude, I literally
Hate Breed, and I saw like
you saw him Walls on that of Hate Jericho Breed show.
I was at Furnace Fest in Alabama.
Oh, good shit. I want to go.
Norma Jean, wild.
Nice.
Wild.
No, yeah, I want to go to Furnace Fest because that seems like
next year's the last one. It's the last opportunity. You got to go.
Yeah, I'll try. I'm moving to fucking Texas this year, so money's going to be weird this year. So, but if I can, I'll fucking figure that out. Because the lineups have been Adult Warped Tour. It's been like the best.
Yeah, it's crazy. They have like all the old bands, you know, that I grew up loving, at least. Especially like I grew up kind of more listening to like, I don't know, a lot of like the Christian labels, like Solid State Records and Tooth and Nail, which had like Under Oath and Norma Jean, MXPX, Anne Berlin, Reliant K, stuff like that. And like all of those bands were there this year. Actually, Under Oath's already been confirmed for this next year. So that'll be
cool. Nice.
You know, but I saw Showbread, which is like my number two favorite band of all time. Like
really?
Yeah, like they're so good. It's ridiculous.
Damn, I haven't heard that band's name in a minute. I only got on board for them for that the one album they got popular on.
The
but,
No Sir Nihilism Not Practical with Mouth Like a Magazine and all that.
Yeah, I remember, because I remember that was when I was first getting into like, I was like, oh, you can like scream for the whole song, not just at a big part. And I was also into every band where the lead singer was like skinny as shit with long hair, because I was always like a fat kid. So I wanted to be that like unnecessarily skinny singer. And Showbread had that. Yeah,
they're wild. I mean, and they're still talented as ever. Like they had basically a full reunion lineup at Furnace Fest this year, and it was wild. One of the best shows I've seen.
It's gotta be fun as hell for those bands too, because you know, you got to imagine Showbread's not like touring like that. But
oh no, they're retired actually as a band. They'll do like one-off shows every once in a while, but they're every time they play a show, they say, "This is our last show, guys. Sorry, you're never gonna see us again." And then they'll come back out like 8 months later. Like, I promise, this is our last show this time. 8 months later, another show.
Bands got to do that. Bands got to stop saying that's their last show. Like, that's why I respected Blink-182, because they would just say hiatus. They would never say we're quitting, because they're like, something's going to happen where we're going to want to make a bunch of money. Or just, you know, in Showbread's instance. Like,
I mean, on their level, it's so different too, because they're making like a lot of money. Yeah. Whereas like Showbread, you know, they could probably make tens of thousands of dollars. Blink-182's out there making millions of dollars every tour. You know what I mean? Each one of those guys takes home millions of dollars every single tour. So, you know, you got to think like, I used to be a concert promoter and a talent buyer. And I know some of the crazy prices people are asking for in big bands like that. And I know what the riders look like, the stuff that you have to have on the table for them when they get there and stuff, you know. And
oh, it's really?
Like, oh, yeah. Like Blink definitely needs at least 5 different varieties of top class porn mags on the table when they arrive.
Wait, is that real?
Yeah, it's real. That's real. They won't even look at them either. They'll be on the table though.
Oh, wow. That's even funnier because that's probably like a bit that they just make some fucking kid go out and buy porn for them.
Yeah, probably. Honestly. I would have been the guy that had to go buy the porn mags for the band too, because I booked the shows and stuff. I never booked Blink, but that's definitely on their rider. I know that for a fact.
Wait, like literally just magazines from the gas station?
No, you got to go somewhere to get 5 different high class porn mags.
Oh yeah, like, you'd have to go to like a sex shop and shit, not just a. Wait, so yeah, what's wow. That's funny. I was literally gonna ask you what's the weirdest one, and is there any, what's like typical on a band's rider?
Dude, honestly, usually it's like you need a veggie tray, like stupid stuff like that. Yeah, I need like 3 cases of water at backstage at all times. I've definitely seen some weird stuff. Like when I did this, I lived in Denver, Colorado. So like they have a lot of like unique restaurants that you can only get in Denver that people go to, and they're like kind of like known around the country, especially in the music world. So like, you know, we'll have bands come through. They're like, oh, I need to have Marquee Pizza. It's the best pizza I've ever had. So we'll have to go get a couple pies of pizza, bring it to the venue. Or like, you know, I want some Moe's barbecue. I'm going to go get a pulled pork sandwich. I need a pulled pork sandwich back. You know, it's just mostly food and commodities. You know, there's oftentimes a shower at a lot of venues. And if there's a shower, they'll ask for like towels and stuff. But it's nothing crazy, crazy. Like the big bands are like, I bet you Motley Crue has an insane rider. Like, I don't even want to know. But,
hold up. I could imagine because, like, I used to live in PA and I live in New Jersey now.
Okay.
And not being in PA, there's something about, like, when you leave the borders of PA, when you leave the borders of Philadelphia, people just forget.
You're talking to a Pennsylvanian, by the way. I was born and raised there. So.
Oh, you were born and raised in PA?
I'm from State College, yeah.
Oh, good shit. So you probably came across a place where you'd order a Philly cheesesteak and it would just show up with like marinara sauce for no reason.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm always a whiz guy. Like if they don't have whiz, then our cheese whiz, then I'm like, it's not a real cheesesteak. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I'm a whiz. I like doing provolone here and there, but like the cheesesteak, I think it's just, you know what it is? 'Cause my dad always put whiz on it when we'd make them at home.
Yeah.
But when you go to Jersey, it's weird. Like they're not bad. Well, they'll throw like mozzarella and fucking peppers and mushrooms on it, and it's not bad. Yeah. But I always get like autistic, being like, "Well, don't make it say Philly on the menu, then. Like, why are you?
I know
this like, is weird.
Why are you saying it's a Philly cheesesteak? Why can't you just call it a cheesesteak?
Yeah,
you
know
I have a lot of family in Jersey too, and I love Jersey, by the way. Like I've done. My old band used to do a lot of touring, and we've played Jersey. We played in like Lansing, like Philadelphia area. And then also like, you know, Altoona, Pittsburgh, stuff like that too. How long ago did you leave PA?
I think it's like 5 years now.
Okay. Yeah. I would have went through the state around that time, but we were never like a huge band. That level, we're more like in the mid level, you know. We had labels offer us stuff, you know, or deals or whatever, but we never took a deal. We're a DIY till I die.
How does that work with the labels? And so they were like offering you deals, but you guys were like, we don't really, like, you were just ignoring them, or were you considering them?
I mean there was one or two that we considered. I remember Victory Records talked to us, and I think One other band, names escaping me, that you might know, but a lot more mid-level labels that weren't really going to do anything for us. Even like big labels like Victory, like they used to have like a Day to Remember on their label, and now yeah. it's like what their job is it basically takes the place of, you know, what sucks is that like people think that like once you get signed, you can stop working because they're just going to like facilitate everything. But the problem is if they facilitate everything, you're also paying them for all of that. Like they're taking a much higher fee to do all of that stuff. And you're expected to give them a return on that investment. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you need to provide them with whatever. Whereas like where I was at, I've already got the background with talent buying. I've been booking tours since like 2012 for my band and several other bands. And all the way through till basically 2020. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, I 100% trust myself because I can go out there. I can ask venues for guarantees. I've made relationships with people from booking shows in Denver. You know, and, overall, you know, people would trust me. So I'd ask for money, they'd give it to me. You know, if I asked, you know, if I told them I was coming through in a certain day, or a lot of times what I would do actually is called a show swap, whereas like I'd have a band from the other side of the country that was more mid-level touring. Their manager would hit me up and say like, hey, we're coming through Denver. Can you get us a show? And I was like, absolutely. I'll get you a show. I'll get you a guarantee. But when I come through your town, can you do the same for me? And they would always say yes. I've only had a couple people that promised me a show swap that weren't able to actually follow through with that. So, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, like it is a big job. It's a big task, but like, if you have the energy to do it, and like, or you're like autistic like me and you can just, you know, do it like crazy and just make it a commitment in your life, then like it's, I think much more rewarding because at least for my band and my project, we were able to, we never came out of pocket really for almost anything. Like our stuff basically would pay itself. Like our tours would pay for itself. Our album writing, you know, we almost never had to come out of pocket for anything with that or music video shoots. We would just like, if we knew that this thing was coming up or this expense was coming up, we would play huge shows and like my band grinded. Like I used to personally be able to like deliver and sell over 100 tickets a show. Almost every show was sold out that we would play in Denver, or at least close to selling out. And, you know, we'd walk out of there with tons of money. You know, if we knew like something like that was coming up, we'd play two or three shows in preparation for that, save the money we needed to. And then we would, you know, go out and record the album, rent the tour van, whatever we had to do. You know, there's a con side to that is that, you know, you're still working within a tighter budget than you would with probably a label, but I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, I think that it keeps you responsible and smart, you know, so.
Oh, okay. So that would be, cause I was curious, cause so often you hear bands basically being like, you know, we're losing money on this, and they're like, I feel like the vibe is they're kind of waiting for that, you know, they're grinding out, waiting for that one big thing. And then, but yeah. Like, what were some general strategies to like break even on tours?
Dude, honestly, like, so you got to ask for guarantees. Like, you know, I wouldn't even ask for a ton. If we could walk away from the tour, like we wouldn't, you know, what I'd usually do is like, I'd have a rider like, hey, can you provide us with like some kind of veggie tray or something, free drinks for the night, something like that. And then, you know, if I'm driving only like, I don't know, I'd say my goal was to have our next show always within 5 or 6 hours of where we were the night before. Being in Denver, it was a little hard cause everything's 8 hours away from Denver. But, you know, we're especially over here in the Northeast or on the West Coast, everything was within 5 or 6 hours. So we could be like, all right, give me like $400 and, you know, we'll come play a show. And to be honest with you, a lot of times, I would book the lineup too. I would find local bands that I've worked with before and put them on the show. So that way, like I'm giving the venue a promise like, hey, these guys are popular. They bring people. You know this already because they're from your market. They're on the show. So like, at least they know they're going to be making money too that way. But I, you know, I'd ask for like, I don't know, like $400 or $500, you know, sometimes, you know, it'd be $800 or $1,000 depending on where we are going to or what, who we are playing for. You know, that would pay for your gas. That would pay for, you know, a lot of the tour van stuff. And if we had extra at the end of the tour, we'd end up using it to write, and record. But, you know, especially like with like merch sales, I think that we, that's probably like one of our biggest assets was merch sales, selling t-shirts, obviously, because we're not talking about CDs anymore. Even CDs are like, you know, they were, as we were playing, they were becoming a thing of the past. My band didn't start touring until 2012. This is when like the digital age started really booming and MP3s started becoming more popular. So at first we were selling like EPs, which are just 5 or 6 song albums. And then, you know, progressively as we got, went along, we were like, we're not printing any more CDs. They're not making us any money. You know, like they'll make you money, but no one buys them. So then you end up with like crap ton of CDs to just hand out for free, which is, I guess, a marketing strategy you could apply to it. But yeah, sorry, I'm getting super autistic about this now, but no, yeah,
I'm super curious about this stuff. Cause it's like, I hate, you know, as a huge music fan, and then like you go on Spotify and you see some of these bands have like 100, 200, 300,000 listens a month. It's like you got the people there, and then it's like all these bands you find out like, oh yeah, this guy, you know, has a fucking a job at a bar, or it's like, oh, this dude's throwing up a GoFundMe for like not like a not that much money and things like that. And you're just like, I'm always curious, like how, like what the best ways to make money in this shit are. Cause as a fan, I'm like, this should be your fucking job.
Yeah. I mean, and with really big bands, it sucks because I mean, they're starting to not do it as much anymore because there was a kind of a network of musicians that stood up against it. But a lot of venues were taking merch cuts from the bands because they knew that was where all the money was coming in. Yeah. So bands were out there selling shirts for $30-$40 each. They're like, the venues were pocketing like, you know, $10 minimum of every shirt that they were selling. So like, how much
per shirt?
Yeah, like I'm not even joking. Like the, you know, $8-$10 a shirt, you know, the venues were taking a pretty substantial cut.
That's crazy.
Of that. Like we played at Furnace Fest, which was with like Korn and Stone Sour, Did Remember, Five Finger Death Punch, and bands that were way heavier than my band. My band was just emo punk. But you know, even there, like for a band like my size, I was like, okay, I'll pay this cut for you. Cause we're on this stage, we're playing for like almost more people than we had ever had. Like, you know, we had played a Warped Tour in 2015. So we had some big crowds, but, you know, we also, you know, when it came to that festival, we had a ton of people in front of us at that show. Mm-hmm. And, we had a line of people that was like 40 or 50 deep, waiting to get to our merch table to meet us after the set. And that was insane. Like all these people bought shirts, we'd sign them, we'd take pictures, hug them, whatever. You know, and you know, of course, at the end of the day, the festival venue took a cut of that. And I wasn't even mad because like I wouldn't have had that opportunity if they hadn't given it to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We still made more money on merch that day than we ever had in our life. And as a festival, they wouldn't let you sell your shirts for less than $30 each. So like my like band had still, yeah, they like my band was selling our shirts still at like $20 each or $15 for some of them. Every shirt was a standard $30 minimum. You can only go up for there. So, you know, we made more money that show on merchandise than, you know, I ever had in my life. So,
yeah. So is that your general feeling on the merch cut thing, or I'm assuming you'd be,
happy I'm very much so against merch cuts.
Yeah.
Like I'm saying like I was okay to pay it, you know, when I was at that level, but I can like big bands, like we're talking about bands like Blink-182 or, you know, Klubicon, you know, Jesus Peace, all these bands, they are bringing in sold out shows every single time. They're selling their shirts for $30 or $40 each, and they can, people will buy it because that's what they, you know, that's what they like. Yeah. But, yeah, like those bands are bringing the venue a sold out show. Why are they still having to pay you a cut of their merch? It makes no sense to me. Like, we sold out venues in Denver, but I wasn't selling out venues in every city across America. You know what I mean? Like, there's a huge difference in that. Mm-hmm. There's like a big gap there, you know? So
yeah, the merch cut things does really feel like, it's like you're already doing enough, man. Like, why is this one extra thing? And like you said, yeah, you know, it's the thing that gets us a lot. Like, the money, that's the real money maker and stuff.
Yeah, it's, I mean, exhausting. And what sucks is, like I said, there's not a lot of money made in the actual music that you're recording anymore. Like, because you're not selling albums, everything's streamed, and you're getting like a thousandth of a penny for every Spotify stream. Like, it's nothing.
Yeah, it's like, I think it averages out to like every million streams, you get $4,000. So
yeah, it's like nothing. I mean, if you're getting 4 million streams, you should be making more than $4,000 for sure. But that's just what happens. You know, the digital side of music just kind of took over, and you know, that's what, just got to adapt. And that is why a lot of bands and artists, like, now we're at the point where like, it doesn't make sense to put in an album. It makes absolutely no sense. Like, I love the band Bear too. Like, I've been I know Caleb, but for a while. And those guys, they'll put out a single, like they'll put out like, I don't know, 4 or 5 singles in a row, spaced a couple months apart each. And they'll do a music video for each one. And then after that 5th single comes out, they'll drop the whole album then. Yeah. That's fine. But with today, if you drop an album, you're expected to tour, you know, 2 or 3 times a year in different parts of the country with that album. So that's a big commitment right there. You know, but also you're talking about dropping one thing that is 10 songs or something, versus you're able to space out an album release over the course of almost 2 years. If you do it in terms of like releasing singles, you have regular content to put out. So that's where like the biggest difference is like, now people have such a short attention span. We need to constantly be putting out new content or they'll forget about you so quickly. Like, there's so many bands out there that people, like my band, would have been forgotten quickly if we weren't trying to put out a single every 2 or 3 months, you know, or doing something special, you know, like playing a festival, something to get our audience excited for. If you're not regularly doing that stuff as a band, then like, you're just gonna peter out essentially. So
do you think, it's an interesting way to look at it. Definitely. Yeah. With the short attention span of everyone. I don't know. Yeah. It's weird. I, as a consumer, I like the albums, but also at the same time, I find myself bouncing around all over the place. I've been becoming a real fan of EPs, especially with my music channel and reviewing. It's like, yo, dude, give me 5 songs, I'll get in and out. And I think there's definitely a lot more options nowadays for how you can go about that. So what is, like, in this current day and age, what is the place where you, is merch where you make the most money?
It really depends on what level your band is at. Like, my band, like nowadays, if I had a band right now, the most money my band would be making would be probably off of actual live shows and t-shirt sales. That's probably where it would be. You know, but a band like, I don't know, A Day to Remember, they're probably, you know, they're definitely making the most money by playing shows. There's no doubt about that. But their next highest, income stream is probably going to be the music itself at that point. I'd be willing to bet, because they're able to sell. People will, like, I've never gotten the fascination with vinyl, but like, those bands are selling like vinyl to hipsters and shit like that. You know, and they, they're still able to sell CDs somehow, even though no one even owns a CD player anymore. It's wild.
Dude, nothing has a CD player in it.
No, you can't buy a new car anymore with a CD player. It's so crazy to me.
I remember when I had, and this was a while ago, this was probably like 5, 6, 7 years ago when I started to realize nothing had CD players in them anymore. My buddy, Tyler Rothrock, put out a comedy album, and I purchased the album to support him. And then I was gonna, I think this was the time where you could still like upload shit and then put it on your fucking device, like put actually MP3s on. And I'm going to put my CD in the CD player, and I go, oh, I don't have one. Oh, these are just, and then I noticed I don't have one in my car. And I'm like, oh, these just aren't a fucking thing anymore. Do you think CD, I saw people, I've been seeing posts like this recently. Do you think CDs are gonna make a like hipstery comeback like vinyl did? Because I don't see it.
Nah, man. I mean, I had nothing but bad luck with CDs. They'd break, they get all scratched up. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Where their niche is now is like they make a great cup rest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's where they're at now. But yeah, I don't think that's gonna happen. I mean, I've seen a couple bands like try to put out like cassettes, and that was interesting. I've seen a couple old punk bands put out like cassette, you know, remakes or you know, remasters and stuff. And I'm like, cassettes are a horrible version of audio, so that makes no sense to me. But like, you know, with vinyl, it makes more sense because vinyl actually like maintains superb like musical quality when you play. Like I said, I'm not a vinyl guy. I don't have a record player, but you know, I also see the value in listening to something that like in its like the fullest capacity. Like you definitely get, it's way better quality than listening digitally. You know, it's literally like exactly how it was meant to be heard, essentially. So
yeah, it has like a larger audio range or something like that.
Yeah,
it's something like that. And then also too, like vinyl, this is probably gonna be the thing everyone says, but you know, it's the fact, just by the sheer fact that it's bigger, and if the band actually takes time on the art, that's kind of like a cool thing to look at. And yeah, the fact that you're not gonna just be bouncing from song to song, having the vinyl like that is definitely a more fun experience. I was thinking about that. You said earlier you play your main instrument's the bass, right?
Yeah. I've got my bass back here.
Hell yeah. So did you mainly come up in punk and like pop punk bands and stuff?
Yeah, like my first band ever was like a punk rock band, and actually my first like two or three bands were punk rock bands. I did have a punk band in my early 20s, and then that kind of transformed itself into like an emo band, because I basically brought people in that had almost every musical background you could think of to surround me, which I think was really good in the songwriting, because we had like influence from, you know, people like Tool or Van Halen, Brand New, or you know, like I have the punk, you know, side. We have like my drummer listened to nothing but like hardcore or metal, you know, so all of those ideas were brought together. And where like I would write, you know, all the songs for the most part, you know, like a lot of times my guitarist would come up with the riff that would get me motivated or inspire me to do so. And, you know, he'd come up with something, send it to me like, yeah, like, can you work with this? And I would do it. Even my drummer knew how to play guitar. So it was like, you know, we all kind of would throw ideas at each other. You know, it was a good time. It was fun, but I think, I think that like, you know, when it comes to, you know, for me, like I learned to play bass when I was like 11, you know, my parents fucking hated it. I was more inspired by punk rock musicians, like I said, from a very early age. I think actually the first punk band I ever heard was MXPX, which is probably why it's still my favorite band to this day. They're not even the greatest punk band, I'm willing to say that, but they're just my favorite. They've always spoke to me, resonated with me. You know, I always grew up wanting to be the bass player singer, and eventually I just became the singer, you know, but I still love to play my bass. Like it's one of my favorite, it's just so fun to play, and punk, you know, riffs and bass lines are just, it's a good time. So
what's your It's funny, MXPX, I didn't listen to them a shitload, but they were my first introduction to, I remember I heard their one song, Punk Rock Show, and I go, oh, music can be that fast. Cool. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, so you threw out bands like NOFX and Anti-Flag. Did that influence your approach to the bass? Because similar to like a bassist in a punk band or a metalcore band or even a hardcore band can kind of just drift into the background. And
that's true. That's very true. I think like it depends on who's writing the music. And if it's collaborative and you have a good bass player, they're going to have their influence there. Like for me, bass was my first instrument. So like when I was starting as a punk band and you know, all of my songs were based off of a sick bass line that I came up with. So,
oh, nice.
It is very easy for bassists to kind of fall into the background and just be basically backbone at that point and be structure. Bass players out there are going to hate me for saying that, but it is very common. You know, there's not a lot of creative bass players out there, unfortunately, anymore. But bands like NOFX, I don't know. I hate to say Red Hot Chili Peppers, but Flea was incredible.
Yeah.
MXPX, Mike Herrera can rip a bass better than almost anybody. So, those bands, the bass was an essential part, mm-hmm. It was a part of the creative process. If you have a guitarist that's writing the song, you're going to come across one of two things. Either the song is going to be nothing of value but the vocals, which is very possible and probable. That's probably what only people will listen to anyway. Or you're going to, have something that's very guitar riff based and has a lot of solos in it. And that's just how that goes, a lot of chugging. So,
yeah, no, I remember, it was, you mentioned it before, Anti-Flag. I remember listening to, I think it was the Press Corps, whatever, however you pronounce it. And like, I remember listening to that going like, oh, you can do all this in a punk song. That's crazy. And then I started to realize like, oh yeah, all these, like all, a lot of the basses are just being like, what's the root note of the chord? I got you, dude. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. That is a normal thing for sure. Like, and I honestly, I like I said, I love my bass. I love to play guitar too. I can play a lot of guitar. I focus more on kind of writing and producing songs now, but, I'm trying at some point to have a full project started up again so I can play shows and all that. It's a lot of work, man. I got a lot of stuff going on. We all live real lives now. We're all adults. We got to have jobs and stuff, which sucks,
Yeah.
Feel what like the guy from SLC Punk that had to get a job,
Oh yeah. Fucking yeah. Don't watch SLC Punk too. Just keep it at the end of one. Just be Matthew Lillard at the end of one.
Yeah.
What are you looking to do like with music and stuff?
So, I mean, I would say like, I'm going through a lot of stuff right now. Like I'm stressed as hell all the time.
Yeah.
I've been writing a lot of music. I've got some medical stuff going on and I want to put out an album hopefully within the next year. So I'd really like to do that. At least an EP, put out 4 or 5 songs, maybe even put them all out as singles and space it out, do some music videos. I've met some pretty cool musicians here in New Hampshire. That are down to jam and record and rehearse and stuff. So, I just need to find the time at this point. I'm just so busy, dude. Like it's so wild where life is taking me lately, but,
bro, I get it. I've been literally just trying to read more and it's making me realize like how much shit I have to do during the day. Like,
yeah,
I just need to grab like an hour or two to read a book and you're like, I gotta do that thing. I gotta do that thing. So I completely get it. I'm probably doing not even close to what you're doing. It's like still fucking annoying. So you're in New Hampshire?
Yeah.
Are you on some free state shit? Is that what?
Yeah, I was a free. I'm a free stater. Yeah. So, I moved here with the intent to make New Hampshire a freer place, do some political activism in the most punk rock way possible. So I do a lot of, I try to stay busy with that. I am on the board for LPNH right now. My term's expiring At convention in 2 weeks, but I'm not doing that again. But I did run for office in 2022. I ran for a county sheriff as a anti-cop anarchist, and that was fun. To be honest with you, like, I didn't have much of a budget. I had pretty good messaging. I ended up getting 12% of the vote, which is really higher than most libertarians get in the country. So obviously most libertarians get 1 or 2% of the vote. I got 12%, so I'm proud of that.
Sick.
And it's in the biggest county in New Hampshire. It's the capital city. Concord is in my county. And it was a good time. I had a lot of fun with it. I did a lot of Second Amendment advocacy and free speech advocacy. And even after that was over, even like this last summer, I did like a police gun buyback outside of Manchester Police Department.
Talk about that. That was hilarious.
Yeah. We basically were just like, I love to troll cops. I always have. So I was like, I want to go and, they have police, they have buybacks where the cops will try to buy, resident guns or civilian guns and try to get guns off the street. That's what cops do in several cities across America. So I was like, well, what if we did a police gun buyback where we just try to buy cop guns? So I had went out there with a table set up on the main road there with signs that said, Google police 40%, which is 40% of cops beat their wives, basically.
Yeah.
Save the dogs, because 30 dogs a day die by cop, if you didn't know that, across
Dude,
America.
I saw that in the video. I backed it up because I go, no. And then I was like, he said 30.
It's 30 dogs a day that die because of law enforcement across America. And I did that. We went inside. We talked to the guy. I was like, can I just talk to an officer? I'm trying to see, if they'd be willing to sell us me their service weapon. I've got $25 gift cards and I've got donuts. And they're like, oh, that's not going to happen. And I was like, well, how about this? If they turn in their badge, I will personally buy them a lifetime membership to the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire. It's a $500 value. It's a great deal. All they have to do is turn their badge in. And the guy just looks at me with the most dead stare. The video says it all. The dude's just giving me this dead stare look. He's like, is this guy serious right now? There was some lady in the waiting room while I was waiting to talk to the guy. She was like, what are you guys doing here? Why are all these cameras here? And I'm like, we're just trying to buy the police guns off of them for $25. She's like, are they going to do that? I'm like, maybe. And we go outside and there's cops getting into their cars. And by that time, the cops were basically told not to talk to us. So I'm yelling across the parking lot, which was private property. So I had to stand outside of the parking lot barely. And I was yelling hey, if you get in, kill any dogs, man, I'm going to find you. I know exactly where to find you. It was dumb. But at the end of the day, it was really cool because we had a ton of people, that would stop their cars and pull off to the side, figure out what we were doing. We got put in a couple of local newspapers off of this.
Yeah.
We had some videos on Twitter and on YouTube that went a little bit viral with that, which were fun and good time. And, there was, people would pull over and just get free donuts, and we'd talk to kids. We talked to people in the community about what are the issues with law enforcement? Good conversations. So that's what it's all about. I've got some more ideas this year that I'm planning to do for, political activism and stuff. I haven't quite announced them yet because I'm trying to find out what to do with some health stuff I got going on. But, I think it's going to be a good year. So we're going to have some fun.
Do the people in New Hampshire seem responsive to your messaging and stuff, or is it kind of an uphill battle? Because I know New Hampshire is live free or die, but
New Hampshire is the most libertarian state in the country. People can try to argue that it's not all that they want. We have 40 reps in the state house out of 400. It's 10%, over 10% of the state house representatives that call themselves libertarians, agorists, anarchists. This is not happening anywhere else in the entire country. So we have over 10% of our state representatives that say this stuff, and they're advocating to nullify federal gun laws, to, you know, promote like school choice, to not let children that are 12 years old cut off their PP. Like, you know what I mean? Like, these are like, you know, based libertarians that, like, you know, they're they believe in the non-aggression principle. You know, this isn't happening anywhere else. So I think that culturally, they're much more receptive to libertarianism because everything here in New Hampshire is more decentralized and more of like a, you know, people rely on the government for a lot. There's less government reliance here, in my opinion, because everything is taken down to the town, which, you know, talking as ANCAPs, you know, this is kind of the ideal thing we would want, is to be as decentralized as possible, take it down to the local's town or city, let us figure out our own policies and let us dictate what we want to do, live and let live. We don't need the government to tell us we're not allowed to jaywalk. You know what I mean? Like, we don't need the government to tell us, you know, some of these stupid things. So, you know, I think at least since I've been here, it's very receptive. And the coolest part of the Free State Project is that, like, every day of the week, there's four or five different events that I can go to hosted by libertarians across the state. You know, there's just so much to do. There's a great community. Like, if shit hit the fan tomorrow, we'd have an entire community of people that we'd be self-sufficient. We'd be able to survive no problem. So I have a good amount of people. And a lot of these dudes are straight up punk rock kids, just like I was. And, we all hate the government, and, we are fighting for personal freedom. So.
Interesting. Yeah, no, it seems fun up there. There is all that snow though. So I might have to,
you get snow in Jersey though, don't you? Come on.
No, I'm fucking around. Yeah, no, I was up at Pork Fest like 2 years ago. There's definitely good vibes up there. So
Yeah, I've got an emo caucus hub at Porkfest this year. That'll be fun. I'm gonna have some music and stuff. So
hell yeah. So we gotta wrap up in a sec. So I am gonna end with, because it is funny being the emo ANCAP. You're in like two of the spaces where you have to constantly like prove you're not a poser. Like, it's
dude, you're absolutely right.
Because it's like you go online and it'll be like this and that, like, you're not a real punk, you're not a real emo, or it's people being like,
just 2 weeks ago on Twitter, I was fighting with someone because they're like, oh, you're not a real anarchist, you're an ANCAP. Like, okay. And then, like, you know, and these were punk rock dudes, I was, you know, people that were, you know, punks that I was arguing with too. So, like, they're musicians, but then also, like, in the punk scene and the emo scene, like, you know, you're not a real emo. What is real emo? You know, stuff like that. Yeah. So, it's ridiculous. But
so just to, you know, just so we know, I didn't interview a poser. Like, I know I'm putting you on the spot, but I'm very curious about what like top five albums or bands. Like, we'll do albums.
Albums. Okay. I mean, are we just talking emo albums? Or are we just talking albums in general? Because, like, I could go off. Like, I even think, like, Showbread, No Sir Nihilism Is Not Practical, is definitely my number one album of all time. That can
really
be considered
all time.
Great. All time. Hell, it's flawless. Every song on that album is flawless. And they could be considered emo for sure.
Just give me your in general. That's what
I'm so there's
about.
That. Abracadabra is by a band called The Classic Crime is fantastic. I would say Secret Weapon by MXPX is a great album. It kind of brought them back to their punk rock days. And then, you know, I'll go with, I don't know. I really like, you know, with emo stuff, like Emery is a huge influence of mine. Emery is an awesome band. You know, it's their first album that had Walls on. I can't remember the name of it even. But they're definitely in the emo sphere. And Silverstein, Discovering the Waterfront, is in the top five as well. Silverstein's one of the best bands I've ever seen live, and they have almost, I would argue that they've never put out a bad album. It's always been a good album. Yeah.
So. Oh shit. Wow. Well, hey man, you did it. You're not a fucking poser. You named a bunch of good bands. You named one I didn't know. So, like, that gave you like way more cred, but yeah, no. So wow, that's sick, dude. And also, right. Also, you were harassing cops, so you're also not a poser politically. So
it's true. It's true. Yeah, yeah. I regularly harass cops. Now I'm a couple blocks away from the station. Definitely looking forward to more of that this year. So they already know where I live. They've given me a fine already on my car. So they're out for me, dude. So
I was gonna say, like, hopefully they forgot what you fucking looked like.
Yeah, I doubt it.
No, they know. They sit outside your house every day. Well, this fucking ruled. I'm gonna let you get out of here. Thank you so much for coming on here. Throw out any plugs or where they can check you out or any of that shit.
Sure. Yeah. I'm on Twitter at the Emo ANCAP. Also, that's my Instagram handle as well. And then, you know, I host a show once to twice a week called Shut the Punk Up. It's every Wednesday and Sunday from 8 to 9 p.m. You can find that on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, Rumble, everywhere. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Fuck yeah. Thank you for coming on. Thanks for everyone hanging out.
Yeah.
Until next time, be good, everyone.
All right.